So in this text, the teacher approaches the student. Most of the Vedic teachings are in the form of a dialogue between a teacher and a student. So the student humbly approaches the teacher and asks for the highest knowledge. He says, that which will dissolve all my vasanas, all my sins, take away all my negativities and bring me to the highest truth. That is the knowledge I am seeking for. He's not seeking for knowledge about chemistry or computers or economics or finance. He wants the highest knowledge. And the teacher starts, last week we had studied Shraddha, Bhakti, Dhyana, Yoga, Tavaihi. He said, know it by Shraddha, which is faith, intellectually understanding the teachings and then having faith in them. Bhakti means devotion or love, love for the knowledge, love for God, and meditation. So these are the three techniques: right knowledge, love for this knowledge, and then application of this knowledge in the form of meditation. So now the student thinks, okay, this is something I can accomplish. I can do it. So that I comes in there, that how will I do it? He starts thinking, you know, what is the technique? How can I do it? So the teacher throws a bombshell, which we'll study in the verse number 3, which is on page 15. Na karmana na prajaya. Dhanena tyage naike amritatvama nashuhu parena nakam nihitam guhayam vibhrajate yat yatayo Vishanti. So this is chanted when a monk or a renunciate comes to the mission. We always chant this. We welcome him with a coconut. You might, some of you who have come to our lectures, whenever you see a Swamiji or a teacher entering, we welcome him with a coconut, with a kalash on it, with like a bowl on it, and then we welcome the Swami, the renunciate. So I'll just chant it all myself. You can join me if whoever can. Na karmana na prajaya dhane na tyage naike amritatvama nashuhu pare na nakam nihitam guhayam vibhrajate yat yatayo vishanti. That's how we chant, and then there is 4 more verses. Today we'll do one, and tomorrow, next week, we'll do the second verse. The other 2 verses are from a different Upanishad, so we won't do that. So it says, na karmana. Anytime you want to achieve anything, the student thinks, I have to achieve. So how can we achieve anything in this world? So he says there are 3 methods. Na karmana. Karmana means by self-effort. Na prajaya. Na means no, not by self-effort. You cannot get this knowledge, this highest truth, by self-effort. Right away he's defeated. He says, I can't do it with my effort. No, you can't. Na prajaya. Okay, how about with others' help? Maybe the help of my family or friends or teachers. No, not with others' help either. Na prajaya. Okay, how about by wealth? Can I buy my way to heaven? By my way to, you know, the highest, by giving a lot of donations, charity, dhanena. Not by wealth either. So I cannot get it by self-effort. I cannot get it with others' help. I cannot get it by wealth. Then how can I get it? So teacher does not want him to be discouraged. He says, tyage naike, by renunciation alone. By renunciation alone you can get it. So he says, I cannot do it, but I have to renounce it. It's not very clear. What is this, that state that the teacher is talking about? He calls it Amritatvam. immortality. Anashuhu is gained. Immortality is that highest state that we are all seeking, that all of us are seeking. Knowingly or unknowingly, we are all seeking that immortal state. Each and every one of us wants to be immortal. If you ask anybody, do they want to die? They said, no, I don't want to die. Even if we are old and you are sick and you have cancer, you're still looking for a cure. You're still... So everybody is looking for immortality. So he says immortality can only be obtained by renunciation. We'll go into more detail about this. And what is this state? He says a parena nakam. It is beyond heaven. Because we always think heaven is the highest. You know, you go to heaven and you live in joy forever. He said, no, heaven is just a temporary state of joy which ends, which is not permanent. Where can I find this? Where can I find this? Do I have to go to Bethlehem? Or do I have to go to Mecca? Or to Mount Kailash? Or maybe after dying, I go to Brahma Loka, where the Creator lives? Or where? Is there some higher world? Where can I find it? How can I reach it? When will I reach it? Those are all the questions. He says it is beyond heaven, nihitam guhayam. It is in the cave of your heart. It is stationed in your heart. It is not some but something far away. Vibhrajate, it is shining. It is shining in the cave of your heart. It is with you at all times. Yat yataya vishanti. Those who put the effort, seekers, they enter the cave of the heart where this self is shining. So basically he has given him the entire answer in this verse itself. The highest knowledge has been given, but of course he will expand more on that. So let us spend a little time studying this very, very beautiful verse, this most beautiful verse. So he says, this highest truth or knowledge cannot be obtained by any of the three. In this world, if I want to obtain anything, anything I want to obtain, I use one of these three methods. Say I want to get elected to the city council, you know, or become a senator or a congressman. So how do I get elected? So either by self-effort, that is, I go from door to door, shake people's hands, kiss babies' cheeks, you know, and talk to them and tell them, vote for me, vote for me. And I travel extensively through the city and through the state, up and down, and that's how I get elected. So self-effort. Or they say, no, California is too big, and if I want to become a senator, I have to go the entire Northern California. That's too much. I need others' help. So then I get my family members, my friends, my other supporters, my followers. I myself travel, and they also campaign for me. They give speeches. They go and talk to their friends. So either I get elected by my effort or with others' help, or some people, they don't want to bother. They say, I'm a billionaire. I have a lot of money. So they flood the TV with ads. You know, the whole day and night ads are running in the TV, on the hoardings, on the radio, and people say, oh, he must be somebody wonderful. So either I can get elected by my effort, others' help, or by wealth. And similarly, it can be anything, starting a new business. I can put my effort, or I can get my friends to pitch in, or I can put money. But this knowledge of the highest cannot be obtained by any of those. I cannot sit down and say, I'm going to reach that. You will not. Because the human capabilities are very limited, and this is infinite, and we are finite. So with my own effort, I cannot reach it. So does that mean it cannot be reached? No, it can be reached. You know, so many great saints, you know, Jesus and Buddha and Shankaracharya and Swami Chinmayananda and Guru Nanak and all these great sages, Saint Francis, they did reach it. How? They say, we'll come about that. So self-effort cannot do it. Others' help cannot do it. A guru can guide you, but a guru cannot carry you on his back. A guru cannot say, I'll give you the highest experience. The moment a guru says that, you better turn around and leave. Because nobody can give you that experience. Nobody can take you. They can show you the path, they can guide you, they can help you, but they cannot carry you. So others help. And obviously by money, you know, you may give a lot of donations, build temples and churches and libraries and hospitals. That's very good. Nothing wrong with that. And that will help doing service, helping others. But still, that highest experience cannot be obtained by any of those. You cannot buy your way into the highest. So how does he say? By tyaga, by renunciation alone. Tyagen eike, renunciation alone. Because what happens is, we, all our activities are either at the physical level, emotional level, or intellectual level. So at the body level, I say I can do something, I can produce something, I can make something. At the mind, I think about emotions, you know, writing poetry and, you know, composing beautiful music. Or at the intellectual level, I can think of study. I can study the scriptures, I can learn, I can. But none of those can give me the highest knowledge. They all can help. Then people say, what do you mean by immortality? You know, what do you mean by immortality? So they say that you have to give up all your BMI activities, renounce them, then only you can reach the highest. So renunciation means giving up. So what is exactly do I give up? What do I? So we will talk in more detail. But basically, the idea that my effort can do it, one has to give up. One has to give up all physical attachments, emotional attachments, and intellectual attachments. Because this binds us. At the body level, we get attached to objects. At the mental level, I get attached to emotions, love, and my dear and near ones. At the intellectual level, I get bound with my ideas, my concepts. So all those things become obstacles. Anything that binds you to the lower becomes an obstacle. You slowly have to detach and detach from the lower and attach to the higher. So detachment and attachment is the way of spiritual progress. Detach from the world. Detach does not mean you don't love the world or don't work in the world, but you are not dependent on the world to make you complete. With that detachment, when you work in the world, you do all your duties without I and my, without the ego, and slowly dedicate all your activities to the Lord, and then find the Lord within. Then the next question comes, immortality. What is immortality? And people think immortality means living in this body forever. I should live in this body forever. That is the most miserable state. Think about it. You know, already when you're reaching 80 or 90 years old, you're walking with a walker and you had a broken hip and now your hip is hurting and then your back is bent and then you have high blood pressure and then you can't breathe because you have congestive heart failure and your brain is slowly going and you are forgetting people and then you can't hear and your people are yelling at. Already you are miserable at 90, 95. Imagine if you, suppose somebody lived till 200. Okay, God blessed him. You are immortal. How miserable would that person be? You know, he's 200 years old. He never dies, right? He has been blessed with it. And he's, what is it? He's lying in one corner like a vegetable. He can't move. He can't hear. He can't eat. He can't drink. They have a feeding tube. And they say, who is that? Oh, that's our great, great grandfather. He never dies. You know, his friends have all died, his wife has died, his children have died, his grandchildren have died. He's living with his great-grandchildren in some corner of the house. That is misery. So why do we want to live forever? So immortality does not mean living forever in this body. This body is bound to decay and deteriorate. It's filth. Eventually, it's going to get rotten and you don't want to live in this body. So what do they mean by immortality? Because we think that immortality means living forever. It's not living forever. What is mortality? Mortality is change. Change is mortality. Like mourning is there. And then morning dies and afternoon comes, right? afternoon cannot come until the morning ends. So morning starts at 6 in the morning till 12 noon. Morning ends and afternoon starts. So the morning died and the afternoon started. And then at 7 or 8 p.m. the day ends, the day dies and night starts. And the night dies and day starts. The summer dies and the winter fall comes. Fall dies and the winter comes. The winter dies and the spring comes. Childhood dies and the youth comes. So everything is death. Birth and death, that is change. So immortality is to go beyond this world of change to that immortal state. And that is permanence. Now people think living forever means what? Getting plastic surgery. You know, you get plastic surgery, you get everything tightened. How long will that last? Sooner or later, you know, you will deteriorate. Or people think by wealth. You know, by wealth I can become immortal. I'll donate a lot of money and then get a hospital named after me or a university wing named after me or my family. How long will that last? The hospital eventually will get old and they'll say, this hospital is old, let's break it and build a new one, or this wing of the university. Or even if the name is there, people forget. So wealth cannot buy you immortality. Money, people give so much importance to money. That reminds me of a little story. There was this village where there was only one Jewish family. You know, the father owned a store. And there was this 6 or 7 year old Jewish boy, name was Jacob. And the other kids used to make fun of him. They would tease him, you know, because he was the only Jewish kid. And so one day they came upon this game. They said, let's see how smart he is. So they would give him a dime and a nickel. They'd say, pick one. So he picked the nickel. So they laughed. Ha, 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 ha. See how stupid he is. Dime is worth more than nickel, but he picks nickel because it's bigger. So every day they would play the game. Pick one. And he would take the nickel. And then they would all laugh. Ha, 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 ha. Look what an idiot he is. So this went on for many months. And every day they would tease him and make fun of him. And every day he would pick a nickel, you know, because it's bigger. And they thought he's such a fool. So one day, finally, a man felt sorry for him. He pulled Jacob aside. He says, Jacob, look, they are making fun of you. A dime is worth more than a nickel. So pick the dime. They are purposely teasing you. He said, sir, if I had picked the dime, they would have stopped 4 months ago. I already made $20. So people give so much importance to money, thinking money will buy me immortality. Or others think, you know, with my children. You know, especially in the East, you know, they have this, I must have a son. Why? Because the son will carry my name. The daughter will get married and will get the husband's name. But my name will be carried through my son and his grandson. That is not immortality, you know. So actions can only give you temporary result. We think we can get permanence by action, by building a hospital, by having children, or by anything I produce will decay. Anything I make with actions, I can either produce or I can purify, I can modify. Like there is a piece of gold, I can make it into an ornament. But then how long will it last? The ornament will have to eventually be melted. It will get old, out of fashion, and again have to be melted into gold. So actions can only give me temporary joy. Temporary are temporary. They end. So what is permanent? Then people think heaven is permanent. Aha. When I go to heaven, there is joy. You don't never get old. You never get hungry. In heaven, they say you never get hungry. You want to eat a cake, you just think cake. You don't even have to go and get it. The taste comes in you and you feel full like you have eaten cake. You don't even have to bother to go to the store and buy it or bake it. Just say chocolate. Immediately you get a taste of chocolate. You want a house, you have a big house, you want to play golf. Anything you want is there. So they say, aha, heaven is happiness. How do they get the word heaven? It's called nakam. Now, kam in Sanskrit means joy. He says, na parena nakam. It is beyond heaven. Kam means joy. Akam means not joy, which means pain. right? No joy is pain. But na akam means not pain is heaven. You understand? First is joy. No joy is pain. No pain is heaven. So in heaven there is no pain. But they tell us that heaven is not a permanent state. Nobody lives in heaven forever. What happens is that whatever good deeds we have done, whatever good or bad deeds you do, majority of them you go through the joy and sorrows here itself. But say you have done a lot of good deeds, then what happens is that for a certain number of years, it may be 5 years, maybe 50 years, maybe 100 years, maybe 1,000 years, their time of course has no relevance. You stay in this heavenly state. But then kshine punye mrtya lokam vishanti. They say that once your good deeds are exhausted, then you have to give up heaven and come back to this earth where you continue your journey. So heaven is not the highest goal. The highest goal is within the cave of the heart. Parena nakam nihitam guhayam. It is stationed in the cave of the heart. Heaven and hell are only the temporary states of joy and sorrow. If you have done good deeds, you go to heaven. You have done evil deeds, you go to hell. But once those deeds are fulfilled, once you have enjoyed the joys or suffered the sorrows, then you come back to this earth, to this world, to continue your spiritual journey, where then you have to either go upwards or go downwards, either go upwards in your spiritual progress or go downwards in your evil deeds. But ultimately you have to keep going through birth and death until you finally discover the truth. And that is the goal of every human being, is to discover the truth within. It may happen in this lifetime, may happen in 10 lifetimes, 50 lifetimes, 1,000 lifetimes, it doesn't matter. But sooner or later, we all will reach. That is what our scriptures say. That is, if you do it in this lifetime itself, you know, have this knowledge, you have this book, wonderful. You can meditate and reach, very good. If not, nothing is lost, you continue that. So where is it? This highest truth, the Lord shines in the cave of the heart. Now, when we think of the word cave, we think of it as dark. Right? It is dark and it is surrounded on all sides by rocks, and then you enter and it is dark within. So similarly, the cave of the heart is where we have ignorance, darkness. And how do you shine? You get a flashlight or you get a lamp and you light it and the cave is lit up beautifully. So similarly, the heart, which has a lot of ignorance, negativity, when this knowledge shines in the heart, vibhrajate, it shines and it illumines the heart. It gives us knowledge. So that highest knowledge is not to be found outside, not to be found in the church or temple or mosque, not to be found in Bethlehem or Mecca or Kailash, not to be found in heaven or hell, but is to be found within your heart as light, as consciousness. So God is everywhere. It's not that God is not everywhere, but heart is where he shines. Just as, where does the United States government is? Where is the United States? It's from sea to shining sea, right? From New York to Los Angeles. It is the US government is everywhere. But if I want to approach the US government, where do I go? Do I go to Nebraska? Do I go to Chicago? No, I go to Washington, D.C. because the president and the cabinet and the U.S. government resides there. The California is all over, but if I want to approach the California government, I go to Sacramento. So similarly, even though God is everywhere, but he shines in our heart. If you want to know him, you want to approach him, go deep within. The heart means where all the love, emotions, compassion, kindness, sweetness, all the good qualities is the heart. Heart is not where all the evil thoughts are. That's why when we love somebody, what do I say? I love you with all my heart. Do I say I love you with all my foot? Or I love you with all my nose? No, we don't say I love you with all my heart, because the heart is where all the love is, all the compassion is, all the kindness. So in the cave of the heart, in the depth of my personality, that truth is reflected, the truth is shines. Even though the consciousness is everywhere, it is reflected in the cave of my heart, and that is where we have to enter. The seekers, you know, one who puts the effort, you have to put effort. It's not going to happen just like that. It's not that you sit down for meditation and people come for here for one or two classes and then they think, I already learned how to meditate and then I can meditate on my own. It doesn't happen. You have to listen repeatedly. This knowledge is deep. It's not that easy. You know, I have been myself listening for 25 years to all these teachers of Chinmaya Mission. And slowly it becomes clearer and clearer the more you listen. So that's why repeated listening is very important. I spoke about it even last week. Again and again, we have to listen to this knowledge. We have all these beautiful teachers who come through, spend time with them, learn from them, and that's how this knowledge will become clear. So the seekers of this knowledge, they have the firm desire to know, and with the help of the guru, with the help of the scriptures, with faith, as their faith increases, their love for this knowledge increases, their meditation gets better, and ultimately they discover it within. So that is what this beautiful verse says, that to get this highest knowledge, you have to renounce, you have to tyaga that. In fact, everywhere in all the scriptures, it is said it is this passion, renunciation. You cannot be attached to worldly objects and expect the highest. Work in the world without attachment. We are not saying you stop working, you stop. In fact, you don't love, you actually your love increases. People say, you mean I should not love my child? No, you should love your child and you should love all the world's children equally. That is detachment. I not only love my child, but I love every child as my child. So that kind of universal love, and with that activity, when you work in the world, then you see the Lord in everybody. The Lord is not only in me, but He is in everybody. Even He is in my enemy, my neighbor, everybody, when you can see God. Mahatma Gandhi said one time, it's very easy to love your friends, but when you can love your enemy with that same amount of love as you have for your friend, then only you can say. So that is the essence of this beautiful verse, which kind of the teacher has shown us the path. How do we go about this path? And we'll go into more detail in the next few weeks. He will expand more on seeker. What does a seeker do? That will be expanded in the next verse. Who is the seeker and what does he or she do to reach this highest? So that we'll talk about next week, expand more on that. That's why I didn't go much into detail about the seeker or the seeking. That will be done next week. Actually, next week, yes. Any questions? Any comments?
I have a question.
Yeah.
When you get to the highest, what is it? You know what I mean?
That's like, a very good question.
You know, because if you give up, I mean, not give up, but if, like, you know, the emotions, the intellect, and whatever, the objects, then what is it? If it's not heaven, then what is it?
No, it's a very beautiful question.
Is it something you don't know until you're there, pretty much?
Yes, actually, all the great seekers, all the great prophets have talked about it, whether it's Jesus or Buddha or Shankar, all of them have talked about this state. Some of them call it Father in Heaven. Jesus calls it Father in Heaven, that state of oneness with the Father in Heaven. Buddha calls it Nirvana. Others, you know, call it Brahman, you know. But they all describe, again, I have not experienced it, so I'm just repeating secondhand. Sometimes in meditation, you do experience that little silence or that bliss. But they describe it as a state of completeness, a state of total fulfillment, where nothing else can equal that. that state, that joy, that bliss, that it's pure bliss, and it is not bliss dependent on something else.
Right.
It's not that an ice cream or a pizza or a diamond or a jewelry or a bigger house. None of those can equal that. And it is uncaused happiness, uncaused bliss. It is not, most of our happiness is because of something. I got something, so I'm happy. I lost something, so I'm sorrowful. But in that state, there is no return. There is no return to ignorance. It is, they call it as a waking up. Right now, we are in this dream of this world, where we give so much reality to this world. But you know there are multiple levels of worlds, right? You know that.
Yeah.
People who run energy, you know, they talk about the energy fields.
Right.
And there are other higher worlds. So this is a state beyond all those worlds, where none of those worlds can equal it. Even heaven, the joy of heaven cannot equal it. That's what they say, that even one moment of that joy is equal to thousands of years in heaven. Just one moment of that experience. And can you imagine a saint who constantly lives in that experience, how joyful that person should be. And then for that person, you can crucify them, you can kill them, you can do anything. You cannot touch them because they have gone way beyond. So it is a state of completeness, a state of joy, a state of bliss, and a state of oneness. Where they say that one alone is, that's why this knowledge is called Advaita. Dvaita means two. Advaita means not two, one. So that saint sees himself in everybody, sees herself in all beings. So that spontaneous state of oneness and that spontaneous state of love and compassion, and that's why the saints compose this Bible and the Bhagavad Gita and all that, so that they can tell us that I have reached, you can also reach.
Yeah. And I guess it's hard for them to describe to
yes.
us what it is, because all we see is this. So
yes.
how would we know what that is unless we get up there and see?
Absolutely. Yeah, for us, that's why what they say, heaven is what? The streets are made of gold. And for us, that is the highest. You know, streets are made of gold. The houses are huge. And the weather is always, you know, 67 degrees, 70 degrees, perfect. And you can enjoy all the food you want, all the money and the sense pleasures. All our concept of heaven is what? Hawaii multiplied 100 times. That is our concept. But they say it's not even that.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I have been able to answer your question.
No,
but
you have. I always just kind of feel like I'm at a certain state of consciousness that I can't like get out of, kind of thing. And you know, I want to break through it, kind of thing. And I just, I guess it'll just come as
yes.
You keep doing your service right. for God, and then eventually it'll
Absolutely.
It'll raise up to another right. level.
And the other thing is that one has to, all the saints describe a state of surrender, that you can go up to a particular point in your meditation, in your study, in your, and then once you reach there, you wait. It's like you knock on the door and wait for the door to open. And in the 12th chapter, Krishna says that one who has surrendered to me, God says, one who has surrendered to me and put his mind in me and constantly thinks about me, works for me, meditates, then they come to a state where beyond which the human mind and intellect cannot go.
Right, yeah.
So you go there and wait for the door to open. Then he says, I lift them. So God himself says in the Gita that when they come to my door and they wait patiently, it's not something you can be impatient about. It's not something I have to get, I have to reach. Because then again the I comes in.
Uh-huh.
I have to get it. I have to reach it. I have to know it. I ends, and then I, when it becomes still, the body, mind, and intellect becomes completely still. In the stillness, when the mind and intellect has no more thoughts, no more agitations, no more disturbances, no more selfish desires, in that silence, that knowledge shines. So the knowledge reveals itself to you. So it's just be patient.
Yeah.
Just keep on doing your meditation. Keep on doing your service. Keep on remembering God. Keep on serving Him. Keep on praying. and then just wait for that final moment, and it will happen. If your desire is strong, if your efforts are sincere, it will happen. If it happens, good. Even if not, the path itself is joyful. It's not miserable. The more you progress, the more you feel inner peace, inner silence. Things that used to bother me don't bother me anymore. You know, things like that. So yeah, so it's a beautiful path. The path is as beautiful as the goal. The path itself is the goal.
Mm-hmm.
There is no goal. Just keep on the path, and that itself is beauty.
Certain foods can help elevate you there too. Are there certain higher level foods to put in?
Yeah, they say that you should eat sattvic foods, pure foods, not foods that are excessively spicy. No, foods that are very spicy, very fat, very rich. They are considered rajasic foods. Then things like alcohol, LSD, smoking, drugs, they are considered tamasic. So one should avoid tamasic foods, obviously, you know, alcohol, drugs and all. And even overeating, eating too much rich foods, eating a more, you know, pure, clean diet, light, healthy, you know. So yeah, those things help.
Yeah.
They don't agitate your mind as much. So food that is fresh, that is not frozen for, you know, 6 months, freshly cooked food that is, you know, light, that is, you know, more.
That's another thing. Yeah, I just need to change because my stomach is kind of funny. And I thought, you know what, if I change what I ate, I would probably progress.
Yeah, that will help, but then that should not be, that's good, but that's not the main thing. See, some faiths too much emphasize diet. Diet is very important. If you eat meat, you cannot progress. You have to be vegetarian. I don't believe that. You know, I believe that as long as your thoughts are pure, what is more important is your thoughts. Not so much your diet. Diet is good, but diet is not primary. Some faiths, some sects give so much importance to diet. Oh my God, they will read labels and, you know, this and cheese and too much of that is not good. More important is not how pure your diet is, how pure your thoughts are, your mind, your emotions, your idea. That is more important. Mental, so spirituality is a mental activity. It's not a physical activity. Diet helps. Like if you've eaten too much, then you feel sleepy.
Yeah, right.
You know, you can't meditate. But it's not the main thing.
Okay.
So don't give too much importance to diet. More important is what is in your mind.
Yeah.
That is more important. Yes?
Talking about immortality, I remember a short tale by Borges. He's an Argentinian writer.
Uh-huh.
And his tale is called The...
Actually, we are immortal. All of us are immortal. We are that. That's what this book will tell you. You are immortal. You are that self, that soul, that consciousness occupying this body. The body will drop, but you will continue to live. So in reality, we all are immortal. We are looking for what we already are, but we are looking for it in this body. But they say, wake up to your immortal state. The state that she was talking about, waking up to that state, then you realize I am immortal. Nothing can kill me. That's what Jesus said. He said, you can destroy my body, but you cannot destroy. So that's why Jesus is more alive today than he was 2,000 years ago. You know, billions of people all over the world remember him. You cannot destroy Jesus. You can destroy his body. So that's what. So they are all immortal. We are all immortal, but we don't know that. That is the only problem. So we think immortal is living in this body forever, and that is torture, as we just heard in this story.
To some people, the idea of immortality, especially with writers, is that people will remember you.
Right.
If there is anybody who will remember you, you will live forever.
Right. True. And that is good. That way you leave back some. But after a while, even that fades away. You know, you're popular for a while, the writer, and then slowly people forget. But yes, that is a way, you know, by leaving, you know, good compositions like Shakespeare, you know, we still remember him. But yeah, that is true. But true immortality is to realize I am immortal. Nothing can kill me. This body will perish, but I will continue to live. That I, who is that I, that is the essence of this book. This I, this Om, this consciousness, this Brahman that I am.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Can they still just, like, if somebody married a Christian, or, I mean, can two people, let's say somebody's in this and somebody's a Christian, can they soar together even though the other person, they might be thinking right, living right, so.
Mm-hmm. No, because there have been saints in Christianity too who have realized, you know, Saint Francis.
Yeah.
And, so yeah, no, they can, because there are this more than one path. This is the path of knowledge. What
yeah.
we are doing is the path of knowledge. But then there is a path of love, where you totally love God and you surrender totally
mm-hmm.
to that God, and then you yeah. and you and that God become one, then you become an instrument of God. So yeah, through total surrender you can. So through the path of love or through the path of knowledge,
yeah.
both paths can take you. So if you have total love for God, like Mother Teresa, you know, there's another.
Mm-hmm.
So all these great saints did reach. And there are, of course, in the Muslim tradition, there are Sufi saints. You know, in a Buddhist, there are, so it doesn't,
yeah,
they don't
matter.
All have to follow this path. They say the path of knowledge is straight, but there are many paths. And
so
some people have a combination of knowledge and love, you know, so there are various techniques.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, like, if somebody marries somebody who's of different religions, and that can still work out, or is that just not recommended?
Sure, no, it can work out as long as they accept each other and that
yeah.
okay, your
yeah.
path is okay,
fighting.
Mine.
Yeah.
Instead of fighting and trying
yeah.
to change the other, you know, acceptance and, you know, inclusive. That's what they say.
Yeah.
You know, knowledge is, you know, is selfishness is exclusive.
Mm.
The knowledge is inclusive,
mm.
and spirituality is all inclusive.
What if somebody has no religion? What if you have friends or a husband or you have friends
who
no
doesn't
religion,
believe in God?
You get along good with them anyway.
I think as long as they believe there is a higher power
mm-hmm.
and they surrender to that, they don't have to call it God or Krishna or Jesus or Buddha. But there has to be a surrender to the higher power.
And they're living, they're thinking right, living it.
Right.
How they're thinking and acting.
Yeah, acting is like.
Say it all.
But the ego has to be surrendered. But a lot of these people who are not religious have a very strong ego, that there is no God, I am everything. And then, you know, then you won't progress.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. The advantage of having God is there is some higher power I can surrender to. Observe your breath. Watch the air as it flows in and out. Body is relaxed. And I'm observing my breath. thoughts arise in the mind. The mind takes us for a ride. Keep your attention on the breath. If thoughts arise, and it's a very powerful thought, family or work or some stressful situation, physical or mental, thought is very powerful and I'm unable to get rid of it. It keeps coming in the meditation. How do I handle it? Just be a witness. Just detach from the thought and watch it. It is a very powerful thought. Agitating. But I just observe the thoughts. I remain centered on the breath or on chanting Om mentally. Let the thought be there. I am not being carried away by this thought. I'm standing by as a witness, watching the flow of thoughts. Detaching from the thoughts, I turn my attention inward. Dive deep within the cave of your heart. Just as a diver goes deep to find a precious pearl, so I go deep within my heart. Find the precious pearl of the Self, the Lord. He is shining there, and I have to enter the cave of my heart with humility, with love, with surrender. Let us practice that for a few minutes. Go deep within.
or